için içinde bütün peşi bayıtmaz abi. On the annual report for 2018-2019. Also officially welcome all of you to this meeting. Apologies that I have Honorable Nicole Abram. She's not well, ill health, so she won't make it. Honorable Kosana also ill health, so he won't make it to the meeting. Dr. George is attending a workshop. Is there any other apology? Okay, those are the apologies that we have. Let's move to the next item, which is the briefing by the National Treasurer on their annual report for 2018-2019. Honorable Deputy Minister, let me hand over to you to make a brief overview. Then we take it from there. Yes, Dr. Maso.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. And then thank you for this opportunity to allow us to present the annual report of the National Treasury. And we're also looking forward to the discussion this afternoon on the annual report that SARS will be presenting. The DG and his team will shortly present the final details of our financial performance in the last financial year. My task is just to give a broad introductory overview. And I think it's important for all of us to know that and this is the obvious fact that we all know, that our economy is not growing, despite the fact that in the second quarter we've had 3.1 economic growth, but we're coming from a very low base given the significant decline in the first quarter. And the low economic growth simply means that businesses are not expanding their businesses, or they are shrinking their businesses, which means that they are not employing more people. They are not expanding their economic activities, which has huge implications on the living conditions of the people who have elected us, and even those who have not elected us because of their they are not franchised on the basis of age. And this low economic growth, as I said, it manifests itself in the high levels of unemployment, poor revenue collection. And as a result, as government, we've got limited resources insofar as revenue is concerned. And even the little revenue we have is largely consumed by the wage bill, SOEs, which crowd out our ability to invest in other social activities. And not only that, but this low economic growth, it is also generating huge social conflict in South Africa. Because of deepening inequalities and unemployment, the competition for resources either in the labor market or in selling whatever poor people can sell, that competition is also taking a violent form. In the recent past, we have seen what is popularly known as xenophobia, which is largely Afrophobia, generated and caused by also the collapse of certain economies in our continent, in which a lot of people come to South Africa or in certain geographic areas in South Africa where there seem to be some economic activities. And this conflict, it also reflects the fact that we have not significantly recovered from the global economic crisis. And we have seen that in the global north, there's a rise of economic nationalism, which shows up in trade protectionism and pro-national employment practices, in which even in the global north, the issue around immigration is a big issue. The issue about the protection of their economies through high tariffs, it's also a big issue. And we know what has actually happened insofar as the Brexit, in which Britain is beginning to see that it cannot be part of the EU. And that has huge implications for us as South Africa. So we are not alone in this bad and terrible economic environment, and there's different responses that government all over the world are undertaking. And then, like I said, as opposed to opening up our economies globally, we're seeing some kind of regionalism, but also economic nationalism, which expresses itself in different economic policies. And our government's response, we have recently released an economic strategy, which is up for debate, which is up for discussion, because the problems that we have are not just global, but we also have our own national structural problems that we must look at and deal with them. And it's for that reason that we've released that document, which is up for debate and discussion, and it has different components on it, which attempt to deal with a whole range of structural reforms that we really need to undertake as a country. And I must indicate, Chair, that the National Treasury, as we said, we are presenting our annual performance report as audited by the AG. And we take into account very seriously the fact that the National Treasury, as a custodian of sound financial management and microeconomic coordinator, we have a huge responsibility to be the best in all what we do. We should be setting the example for all government institutions insofar as the financial management is concerned. However, as you will see in the annual report that the DG will be taking us through, we've had a couple of setbacks. We've had irregular expenditure, which will explain why we have both irregular expenditures as well as the wasteful expenditure. And of course, insofar as performance, we've obtained 84.8%. Ideally, we should be at 100%. However, we are at 84.8%. Another challenge which we need to highlight from the word go is the fact that at highest levels of our organization, we still have a vacancy rate, which we'll also again explain later on why we do have the high vacancy rate. And I must indicate that the responsibility of appointing the senior officials at that level lies with the ministry. And you will notice that in the recent past, there have been the turnaround time insofar as the political leadership has been very high, and that has had an impact insofar as the speed at which we're moving in filling some of these vacancies. We are committed to make sure that we finalize the appointment of senior officials at high levels. And some of them, we've just had a resignation, for instance, of the DDG for asset and liabilities. Some of you know Anthony. Julius is served the department very well for about 20 years, 27 years. So he was one of the veterans of the National Treasury, but he's left us, and we'll make sure that we fill that vacancy and other vacancies as soon as possible, and putting very robust financial systems for financial management throughout the country and also for national treasury is one of the key issues that has preoccupied our attention and our focus as national treasury. And we are, I'm sure you know the challenges with the IMFS, which has also generated some of the problems insofar as the our ability to put the financial or continue with certain financial systems that we have, which have caused us the some of the irregular expenditures that we are going to be reporting today. So, Chair, with that in mind, having said that, let me conclude by indicating that as National Treasury, indeed, we are prepared to deal with our own internal challenges and position ourselves in a manner that continues to provide our country with sound financial management and making sure that we contribute towards the program of economic growth. And I must also apologize for the absence of the National Minister, who could not be here because this subcommittee meeting of Cabinet, which is meeting today, and therefore he could not join us. So, but I take full responsibility for full political responsibility for all the issues that you'll be raising, and I fully represent the ministry as the deputy minister being here. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Dr. Masondo, for the political overview. Before we proceed with the briefing, let me introduce one of the members of the Secretariat who has joined us, Mayor Tebogo Espaillat. She has joined us just from yesterday. You are used to Ariko Kosa. Ariko has been redeployed to minerals and energy. So from now, the Secretariat will be Alan and Mayor Tebogo. And you know the rest of the team, the researchers, content advisors, and all of them. So, Rala Moela, Sister Tebogo. Feel at home. Thanks. Then let's move to the next item, briefing by the National Treasurer on the annual report. Full or the DG.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honourable members. Good morning, colleagues. Chair, thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to present this report to you. I'm going to not do it alone. I'm with the colleagues from the Treasury here. I'm with Laura, who is head of my office. It's my Momoni, as you know very well, is the head of financial sector, second financial sector policy. Biesel Babuji is the acting chief financial officer, CFO. And next to Biesel is Winnie Matibul, acting CPO. Starim Gomez Lulu is the DDG responsible for corporate services, and Slim Dile is the CFO, but she's acting office of the Accountant General, OEG office. And I think, then there's Edgar and Sabir at the back, and colleagues who are all from the ministry. Thank you very much.
Let's also welcome. Officials from Office of the Auditor General, who have been with us since yesterday.
Thank you. I should have started introducing them because they are part of our team. I should have started there because we are one in this.
They are independent.
We are one in this. Israel is our friend. She's with us all the time. No, thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I'm going to start with this slide. This slide is a very, you know, we normally want to start there and remind ourselves where we draw our mandate from. You know, Chapter 13 of the Constitution, we draw a mandate from the PFMA, which gives us certain responsibilities, and broadly what our vision statement is. And when we say the Treasury is a custodian of the national financial resources, we hold ourselves accountable to the nation to discharge our responsibilities professionally and with humility and with the promoting growth and prosperity for all, as the DM indicated earlier in terms of our broader role. We also aspire to excel in the quality of the work that we do, analyzing, giving advice, executing our financial management responsibilities broadly. We aim to realize the full potential of South Africa's economy and people, and to mobilize the resources of the state, business enterprise, and wider community in a partnership of trust and mutual respect. So broadly, that's what we continuously remind ourselves what we are all about and what we represent. And we have to continuously inculcate that in the various divisions in the system, that management of public finances, maintenance of macroeconomic stability, financial sector stability, and broadly regulating the economy remains what we are all about. And I think we constantly do that. What we are currently doing, Chair, is to engage in a second level, or call it a next level of our planning process, which is looking at the treasury process between 20 and 25. And we're also doing an organizational review, which we've been doing for a while. We are almost done of all the divisions, as you can imagine. The treasury is quite complicated. So we've been doing this. What are we doing there? We are looking at the organization and see if it's fit for purpose in terms of what we are all about. And we constantly pick up that in some cases we need to scale up our interventions, and in some cases we need to scale low our interventions in executing our work. We also anticipate that our strategy and structure will be directed and strengthened to deliver on the future policy imperatives of what we are all about, and in terms of our broader priority, which is, you know, ensuring that we maintain and do what we have to do as part of our mission and vision, and as part of obligations as per the Constitution and obligations as per the PFMA. Slide number three, not sorry, number four. there's a report right in the preface of the annual report that we presented. What I'm doing there, in a few pages, Chair, I was trying to just simply give, and that's between pages 15 and page 26. What we did for the purpose of members, easy reference, we have in each slide indicated where we are at. The thick document that's in front of you. Page 15 to pages 26. That's where sort of I've captured broadly what trying to summarize in a few pages what we are all about. That, you know, in painting the real situation, we are in a low growth environment, as the DM said, and that's not where we want to be at. We both have internal and external pressures, what is clear for this economy to thrive is that we have to constantly prioritize, constantly ask ourselves if we will be able to meet the priorities that are in front of us, and that of what's expected of us. We've got many a stakeholder. We play a lot oversight in national departments, and it's not an easy when clearly we have to do the same to ourselves. As much as we play an oversight on the whole of the state, if you think about it, including public entities, all provinces, all municipalities, in terms of one of the divisions that we're in. We've got certain delegated responsibilities, and metros in particular, that we look at and show interest in, and endless public entities. What has become a challenge in the last five or so years has been oversight on state-owned companies per se. Not all, again, because it's going to be too complex, but at least we've limited it to those that we provide guarantees. So again, we have to constantly do that. Our intergovernmental fiscal system is in place and it's matured in the last 24 years, and we continue to coordinate budgetary processes at province and municipalities, and we've been doing it well. You would have noticed through this committee's work in the last few years that we developed the Twin Peaks implementation regulatory framework. We established the Prudential Authority, we established the FSCA, and clearly on that front, we as a council have done well in ensuring that we align with global requirements. And as I said, internally, because our work is internal and we've got both internal and external pressures, the DM did indicate the challenges what we have around ISMS in particular, and I'm putting upfront because the last engagement in the committee, this issue was raised. In terms of the current status, we obviously the investigation was done, complete, and we have started a consequence management process insofar as implicated officials and service providers as per the recommendations of the report. And once you think that the committee wanted that interest last time, and as we have said previously, the committee feels want to focus on that at the appropriate time, we'll be more than happy to do that. We continue to do work on the jobs fund, albeit some challenges. The municipal finance improvement program and the city support program really, our involvement there is to really make and ensure that we work tirelessly in ensuring that we build partnerships and ensuring that we optimize our work in terms of what municipalities and provinces do. And because clearly, if you look at the AG's report in the local government space, you find that there are huge challenges there. So through our municipal financing program, we continue to do what we have to do. Although this enthusiasm that I'm listing here got us into trouble in terms of the next slide. The next slide, which is slide number 5, where I'm lifting it up front again, the report outlined and the confirmation from the AG yesterday and in other instances that the Treasury recorded this year, and we are not proud of it, actually we should bury our heads in sand, to actually incur irregular expenditure of 588 million for the financial year 18-19. And we've got a comprehensive breakdown of that outlined in slide number 23, whereby 122 was from the previous financial year, obviously we still have to ensure that the OCPO condones that in a way that consequence management processes are underway in ensuring that that does not occur, and we take appropriate action as required in law whenever irregular expenditure is incurred. Same thing here, as I said, our enthusiasm that I outlined in the last bullet in slide number 4 was the trying to go ahead to ourselves, a contract was approved, not properly delegated official signed. A memo of equivalent of about 141 million rand, which the OAG deemed as irregular because it was not properly, a proper delegated official was not signed. In this case, the DG was supposed to sign the memo, but the acting Accountant General signed this memo, and this has obviously since been rectified and will be condoned in this financial year. So again, it's something that we rectified. 185 million of that amount, 186 million is contract extensions of transversal systems. Now this is a very cagey situation and environment. You've got 25-year-old system, or even more, in fact, actually more, many years, transversal systems that have been operational in place. Basic accounting system, BAS, PERSA, LOGIS, Vulindlela. Now, all of those systems are archaic in nature, old, but being implemented and still carrying us through when clearly a full rollout of IFMS is not yet in place. So now, the issue is, do we, rightfully so, in terms of where the AG was, where they sit and how they view things, but obviously contrary to where and how we view this because of clearly the challenge, do we extend the contract based on current terms? When we test the market, is the market in line with supporting transversal systems? in our view analysis that the market is not, and unless we are moving to a more modernized system, that's going to take that forward. So this is going to remain with us for a while, and again, it's an issue that's subject for deliberation, but however, we are more than happy, and we obviously constantly engage the AG on this, where we view it differently. The 75 million of that is we've got a relationship. GTEC is a government company. Now, the irregular spending of about 75 million in accounted for in this 588, 466, is part of those incurred in GTEC. And all this is a result of the principal agent relationship that we have with them as a company. So whatever happens in GTEC is then generally applicable to us. But as we evolve, that needs to be clear so that they can account for their own, call it sins for now, in terms of where they are at. Now, the general point that, as I said, we are not proud of that, last year it was 809 million, and so 2017-18, irregular spending, this year it's 558, and we hope at some point it will be zero, if not next year or the year after, Chair, in terms of where we are at. But what then do we do? And the points I think I must make in this framework and thinking framework is that we, as I said, we cannot just bury our heads in sand and not do anything. I made a point around disciplinary action and consequence management, call it that for now, in respect of IFMS, and we're doing something about that. Now, the audit findings as we see them here, we've developed an audit plan that ensures that we deal with all of those deficiencies that we picked up. We have set up a dedicated monitoring committee, and we've piloted this in the last financial year that will strengthen the financial management moving forward. And we've identified one of the key challenges that the Treasury as a department has, not just in terms of our role broadly, as a department, was the skills base and the critical vacancies that we experience from time to time in the supply chain department of the National Treasury. We have since filled most of those. Contract management, supply chain as the AG, record keeping in some cases. You'll remember those of you members who were part of the fifth administration and maybe were in this committee or may have picked it up. The issue last year was about the irregular spending of a memo that obviously was not found. And based on that, because the AG process is just simple, there must be an audit act, incident, and there must be, evidence, sorry. So they were looking for a memo, and if they don't see it, then it's irregular. So, and then they were right at the time. So we since found the memo, but that was not the issue as to whether we found the memo later. Because at the time when they wanted it and wanted to close our books, they didn't have the information. We picked up that the issue was record keeping generally, which was lacking and which was not up to scratch. But since then, we have significantly strengthened those processes, and the AG obviously is aware of the kind of processes, including in our own audit committee that you've highlighted. We've got quarterly quality assurance of financial statements, and we have to continue that. DDGs, not only these that are here, including all DDGs in the Treasury, are held responsible for repeat findings. Our findings register obviously is assigned to each one of the DDGs, and we must ensure that they either do. And my line chair, even this morning, to them, and we've been doing it now for almost a year, and in the same way that I'm doing it now to you, I've been doing it to them, that it is, and I was using harsh words, I said it is unfair on the Treasury as an institution, on the country as an institution, for a DDG not to execute their work in a way that is above board, in a way that they take full responsibility. Because if the Treasury gets an irregular expenditure like we experience now, it is an indictment on the Treasury as an institution. And not only that, it's an indictment on the country. Because if the country's Treasury cannot get a clean audit, then there's a problem. So that's the tough language that I say, it is then not only unfair on me because I'm not the one sitting or filing the document, you know, but I'm the one explaining. So we have been playing hardball among ourselves for the last couple of months, including the audit committee, and them really ensuring that we take appropriate action when need be in terms of ensuring that we act above board. The high vacancy rate among DDGs in particular, not across the department as a whole, among senior managers, the DM explained that. And I must just echo this because there's also, maybe in some instances, Chair, it may be true, in most instances, that where there are vacancies, managers then are constrained to work. It's normal, it's natural, I agree with that. But based on what the DM explained earlier on in the process and the whole reasons and the evolution of different ministers and so on, that in fact. But what I can comfortably say to the committee here is that in the years that have been DG at the Treasury from at least 2017, and in the years that some of these DDGs have been acting, at no point did I, and I'm putting my head on the block on this, and I know what I'm talking about, at no point did I pick up that DDGs who are acting are not fully acting because they don't believe that they've got the full authority. We've got committed individuals in there, even in an acting capacity, and that's what defines us. That's the strength of the Treasury. Who, whether they are act or not, or whether they are acting DGs for a day or a month or a two or a week when I'm away.
It is that commitment that's there. So, in our case, it is not correct to suggest that
they are not taking full responsibility, but accepting that generally that may be the case, that some DDGs may not necessarily. The other final big thing on this front is that it is difficult, Chair, where we are at, we're competing with high-paying people out there in the private sector, banks, financial institutions, international organizations, where staff retention becomes an issue. As to how do you constantly keep staff from crossing the street to the bank, to the Reserve Bank, which is natural, like in most cases, or just joining a bank. So we continue to actually ensure that we compete with the private sector to acquire skills and to retain skills. So I thought, let me mention that just as a point. Because if I don't do that, then it's like we are okay with, it's not ideal. In fact, as if I was preempting what may happen this week, I have been in touch with the Cabinet Secretariat for the past 2 weeks. When I clearly see, especially after Anthony Julius, he did not, as the DM said, he's not resigned per se. It was just, it's a resignation, but it's like a retirement. He was not one of those angry people and left the Treasury. No, he took advantage of the voluntary early retirement option that government has out there. After serving 27 years in the Treasury, he decided to leave, and then he left with our blessings, etc. So it then dawned on us that we cannot continue like this. So Cabinet Secretariat, we agree that apart from the NMOC, this National Mark Organization of Government process, that currently we will have to request a special dispensation in Cabinet that allows these positions in the Treasury to be filled. Because if not, people can only take it up to a point, because the loss in earnings is obviously, they may get an acting allowance, which is equivalent to the pay, but in a bigger scheme of things, when you get pension, and you've been acting for a year or two or so, it becomes quite a challenge. So we have a process that we agreed to the Cabinet Secretary, DG Lubis, we agreed. What's left now is the same for the Minister to engage with, to write, in fact that was the advice, to write to the Minister of Public Service Administration to allow the special dispensation that we package. Because the interviews were held, right? It's not that, for most of these positions, interviews were held, recommendations are made, they are there. So it's a matter of appointment. And then we will obviously get guidance when Cabinet processes all of these And in some cases, we'll obviously have to re-advertise, I can imagine, or in some cases we may not, but clearly in some cases, at least in the ALM position, we'll just simply have to advertise immediately once more, and that process will be underway. So, Chair, I will leave it here for now. I'm not going anywhere. I'm here. Laura is going to take us through the actual performance of the department. Laura's formal role, Chair, she's the chief director. Apart from just heading my office, she's the chief director responsible for performance monitoring and evaluation, meaning keeping the treasury checked and through the office of the DG we just send we irritate the system in the treasury. We'll have a better way to get going, because this is not who we should be or who we are supposed to be. But we can do far much better. So I'll ask you, Chair, with your permission, to take us through a few slides, and then we can conclude later. Thanks.
Thank you, DG, and good morning to the committee. In terms of our predetermined objectives, we had two programs that were audited for this year. That was Program 2 and Program 8. We received findings on both of these programs, and in particular, the findings related to completeness. Completeness is our ability to provide evidence that which we have declared as achieved is the total universe that was achieved. Now, this does not mean that what we achieved was not evidence. We were able to evidence that. What we couldn't evidence was the total universe. And in particular, this relates to our response to user requests. National Treasury has very few indicators that can measure Batho-Pele principles, because we're a policy department. And therefore, we have decided that where we can, in terms of responsiveness to requests and efficiency in responding to those requests, whilst it is a demand-driven indicator and therefore not completely in our control, we will still measure it. The manner in which, therefore, we have to measure it, because we can't predict how many user requests we would get in any one year, is to require of the divisions to prove that for every request we receive, we respond, i.e. 100% response to user requests. The challenge we have is where we got verbal requests. So we don't have a written record of the actual request. What we have is a record of the response. Going forward, what we have agreed with the AG is that we will implement a control measure that will then be able to record those verbal requests, either by saying in some instances no verbal requests will be accepted, it all has to be written, or where we will accept verbal requests, we will provide a register to the requester every quarter and get them to sign. The Ministry has indicated to us they would prefer the former, where we put a hard control in where we don't accept user requests going forward. In terms of our total achievement for this year, we achieved 84.33% of our indicators, which is 113 indicators we achieved, which is up from last year, which at the time was set, last year was 79.8%. So the agitation in the system is working from the office of the DG. We do track, although because it is the end of the year, we give an absolute, i.e. achieved or not achieved, but we do track where we've not achieved or partially achieved. The reason why we track this even for the end of the year is because National Treasury has introduced organizational planning at a chief director level, so operational planning at a chief director level. So we've added a new layer in our ecosystem of planning. This allows us to better monitor at the delivery level, and it allows us to better monitor against budgets. So we monitor even partial achievement, because we then align it to any expenditure spend. In terms of this, you will see then, I've also provided, whilst we have programs, we provided you with the total achievements against programs, I've also given it to you for divisions, because not all of our programs are one-on-one relationship with divisions, as you know, and as I've reported every quarter. for divisions, economic policy achieved all of the indicators. Tax achieved 3 and partially achieved 2. The budget office achieved 10 of their 11. Intergovernmental relations achieved 10 of their 11 targets. Public finance achieved 2 of their 4 and partially achieved 2. Assets and liabilities achieved 13 of their 14 indicators. Office of the Accountant General achieved 28 of 32. The Office of the Chief Procurement Officer achieved 8 out of 12 and partially achieved 4. International Financial Relations achieved all of their indicators. Civil military pension contributions to funds and other benefits achieved 4. Technical support, which is Program 8, achieved 17 out of their 22. And administration achieved 4 out of 5. In terms of specifics, as is the norm, we start with Program 2, we do administration last. We achieved 88.33 of our indicators. Our partially achieved, all of the partially achieved indicators you'll see in our annual report, we have reported what action plans will be taken. Those action plans are monitored in the next financial year, i.e. where partially achieved or not achieved has happened in one financial year, we take the monitoring of that into the next financial year to ensure that we get achievement. So it is not dropped off at all. In terms of our partially achieved, the Twin Peaks implementation regulations developed and 2 regulators were established. However, the complexity of this indicator was that there was more than one component of this indicator. So whilst they achieved the 2 components, the 1 component of the bill was not yet supported into Parliament. And that is because of the consultation process. Now, I know that one of the questions that I'm sure the committee may ask me is, why do we measure those components of a process that is not fully in the under the authority of Treasury? We can't predict how long the consultation process happens, but we insist that we need to ensure there's efficiency in the system. And one of the important things that Treasury does as a policy department is do tabling of bills. And so we do measure it, and we do require of divisions to try to manage the process, and where the stakeholder process takes longer, you know, that then becomes a performance issue for the division. In terms of Program 3, and I'm sure you'll ask specific questions, so I'll go through this quite quickly so that we can get to question time. Program 3, which is public finance, we achieved 84.62% of our indicators. In particular, I'd like to highlight that a new human resource capacitation grant has been introduced for provinces, as well as a new integrated urban development grant was introduced for intermediate cities, and that Treasury, through its Municipal Finance Improvement Program, that MFIP program, that we had a challenge with in terms of irregularity, has placed technical advisors in 3 provinces to strengthen the capacity of these treasuries, as well as address revenue challenges of selected municipalities. We also assessed 36 plans to support infrastructure planning in provinces. You will see infrastructure and infrastructure development is a focus and priority for National Treasury, and you will see how that is now becoming an imperative in our APP as we move forward. In terms of not achieving, as you know, the expenditure ceiling announced in the main budget was unfortunately not achieved, in terms of that, it was revised upwards by 14 billion in 1920 and 1.3 billion for 2021 and 732 million for 21-22, as was announced in the main budget. In Program 4, which is assets and liabilities, we achieved 92.86% of our target. The one we did not achieve was the credit rating agency. We do measure this indicator. Our relationship for ALM with the credit rating agency is an important indicator. The actual meeting is the end of a value chain. The ALM has to do, and Treasury has to do, significant amount of preparation for these meetings, and it's that preparation that we measure. Unfortunately, one of these interactions did not occur, and therefore, in terms of our measurement, we underperformed there, and that was because one of the agencies decided to reschedule the meeting due to the elections, and it's on this basis that the performance indicator was not met. In terms of Program 5, we achieved 81.82% of our indicators here. Now, whilst we agree that just in terms of general numbers, this program has the most underperformance, but I do want to indicate two things. One, it has the most number of indicators by far between all of the other programs, and two, that OCPO is still in a maturing phase. So many of these indicators were what was initially envisaged when OCPO was planned, and now as OCPO is maturing, we're shifting some of those focus areas, and that's why you will pick up some of the poor performance in this area. In terms of partially achieved, the training sessions in risk management, we have refocused that work and how we deliver that work. It is not Treasury's responsibility to set up curriculum for higher education, and so we are better articulating as we better and more robustly engage on what is Treasury's work. We all see that we are re-articulate some of this work. So the guidelines on risk management curriculum, that has been rescheduled. Also, for the Chief Procurement Officer, the number of instructions issued. Underperformance is attributed to the protracted consultation process required prior to issuing an instruction or circular, and therefore some of these were not concluded in the required period. And as I indicated, we measure the amount of time stakeholder engagements should take, because that is often an inefficiency in the system. If you have protracted stakeholder engagements, you need to get to a finality. The implementation of the strategic sourcing opportunities plans, the underperformance there is attributed to three projects being delayed. The one was due to a request by DOH, and so although it was not due to underperformance by Treasury, it's due to a request by a user department, it still is structurally indicated as underperformance by Treasury. The stakeholder engagements conducted in terms of 5.7.1, the forums were rescheduled due to a low response rate. We generally find in an election year that our stakeholder response engagement rate intergovernmentally is reduced. And this is simply because of the demands placed across the intergovernmental system during a change of cycle between one election and the next. And then the number of business processes defined for supply chain management. The underperformance there is because we conducted a gap analysis, and the outcomes of that gap analysis indicated to us that fewer business processes were required than we initially envisaged. And so because we had already planned that number, it came through as a technical underperformance. Program 6 achieved 100% of its indicators. I do just want to highlight here, in terms of some of the work that we did here, we supported the Minister of Finance in his newly established role of budget oversight at the African Union. And through the committee of 15 finance ministers, we were able to formulate a budget for the AU that's had a saving of 12% year on year for that AU parliament. We developed terms of reference for the National Treasury Africa strategy that we are now developing, which is a particular strategy for a national treasury that engages with the continent on matters of economic policy and economic transformation and development. And then National Treasury led the planning and coordination of South Africa's participation at the January 2019 West Davos meeting. In terms of Program 7, we achieved all of our indicators there. I do want to indicate that our indicators for Program 7 are directly related to the service level agreement we have between Treasury and JEPA. And in this way, we measure the service delivery agreement between ourselves to ensure delivery. And then Program 8, we achieved 77.27% of our indicators. This is our lowest performance across a Treasury was in Program 8, although we had important achievements, not least of which 26 transaction advisory projects were registered, 32 capital project appraisal reports were completed, 50 catalytic projects were approved, 10 integrated projects in integrated zones were implemented, and of course the jobs fund. We had matching funding was committed, new jobs were contracted, and training opportunities were all contracted. Our partially achieved was equally mainly in the jobs fund, and that had mainly to do with, as we've explained to the committee during the in-year monitoring, that each of the call for expressions of interest for jobs fund has been directed in a particular sector of the economy to generate and catalyze job creation in that sector. The call for expressions of interest in the agricultural sector unfortunately occurred in a time where the agricultural sector was suffering from external pressures, not least of which was the drought. And the response, both in terms of the number of projects we received there, but equally between projects being received and projects going through the investment committee, and even after having gone through the committee, projects that were approved and then actually implemented, we had drop-offs. And that you can see coming through in these figures. Finally, in terms of Program 1, administration, we achieved 80% of our indicators there. If I could just, sorry, go back to Program 8, I did notice, I did want to just raise with the committee that in terms of Project 7 and Project 8, Project 7, we had four indicators in our APP, and we reported on four indicators. And on Program 8, we had 22 indicators in our APP, and we reported on 22. If there's been any confusion about specifically Program 8, remember that the strategic outcome objectives that are at the top of each program, that only gets reported at the end of the strategic process, not at the end of the annual this annual year, and Treasury got an extension to say that the end of our last 5-year strategic plan was extended for this year so that we could be in the cycle, the same elective cycle, because Treasury was 1 year out. We got permission to extend our 5-year strategic plan for one extra year so we can go into the correct cycle one. And two, perhaps the calculation misunderstanding came in that we had a number of indicators from the previous financial year, into last financial year that was no longer there. And the reason is because, remember, GTAC has their own APP now. So any indicators that were being reported under GTAC could not be reported under NT, and hence you had the difference in the numbers. But what we have in our APP and what we have in our APR, please be assured we are reporting the same numbers, or the AG would definitely have picked it up and we would have had a finding on that, and we don't. In terms of Program 1 administration, we achieved 80% of our indicators, and I do want to indicate that we achieved a saving of 2.4% of the rand value budgeted for paper usage, travel, and strategic sourcing, which is more than our targeted 1%. It is challenging to squeeze savings, particularly out of strategic sourcing, given that a number of these are transversal contracts or that service providers are already giving us the best price that they can, but we did manage to get savings there. I do want to indicate that the internal audit plan, we achieved 90.7%, which was less than our 100%. I'd like to raise just an important issue there, that whilst we achieved less than our intended planned audits, we had a significant number of increased in our ad hoc audits. And much of this is as a response to the IFMS forensic report. We had indicated, and as the committee, we had reported to the committee, that all matters that came out of the IFMS forensic report, we would then inculcate into the system in order to strengthen those organizational areas, whether it's contract management, whether it's record management. And so the internal audit did a lot of work in their ad hoc investigations in assisting us in that regard. However, we do need to acknowledge that internal audit had a resource shortage in the a constraint in the beginning of our reporting period. That was in part alleviated when we appointed a panel that we were able to then bring in external resources to support them. And unfortunately, there was challenges with that that bidding process, and so that hence we've had some we're resolving those resource challenges. That is our performance. I'd just like to then go into our human capital. The key issues have already been discussed by the DG in terms of the vacancy rate and how we are addressing our vacancy rate, particularly in critical posts. Our total staff complement of Treasury is 1048 employees, of which 87% are black and 58% are female. And we are pleased to indicate that in terms of our ratio, gender ratio, we equally have that kind of gender ratio in our EXCO. And the DG has just announced within Treasury that we're setting up a committee that is specifically focused on ensuring that National Treasury, in all of its policies and practices, are gender sensitive and gender not only gender sensitive but just gender positive. And that committee is going to start work shortly. We made a total of 18 promotions, internal promotions, and Treasury's acknowledged for what is known as growing our own wood. However, we do look at the balance between bringing in external skills and promoting internal skills to ensure that we create that that positive tension between our continued culture and bringing in new and innovative ideas. 98% of SMSs entered into the performance agreement. Those who did not sign agreements are not eligible for any performance rewards, and consequence management is done for those who have not signed, unless they had a good reason for not signing. 75% of employees participated in skills development and leadership programs, and one of those in particular is related to women. At this point, I'll hand over back to the DG as it relates now to budgets.
Thank you very much, Chair. We'll go quickly through the numbers. We've spent 28.7 billion, almost 96.4% of the appropriated budget, and this includes transfers to SARS and transfers to Secret Services and transfers to the New Development Bank of 4.3 billion, among others. Net underspending was 1.1 billion. It looks huge, but if you get into the details, you'll pick up that there are reasons, and insofar as we are concerned, we think we may have done well, especially if we look at goods and services. Firstly, by just throwing money to a problem would not have helped. Government has indicated an intention to set up an infrastructure fund, and we had said that DBSA was going to be the hub. Now, we could not just transfer the money when DBSA was not ready, because it would have been
fruitless if you think about it. So keeping the money in this case. The same here with IFMS implementation. At some point, and the history of IFMS is long, and we can take into details when we meet the chair, that at some point we had to delay payments because of the issues that the forensic report, including the internal audit report, identified initially. So obviously slow delays in the implementation. It's not delays per se, but it's actually, you know, paying money would have meant we pay without creating, giving good reasons that you are sorting out the problem that was there. Jobs fund, underspending of about 252 billion, and a small amount of 60 million on the transfer to the CMA, some savings, or call it underspending for now because of exchange rate differences to obligations to the DFIs that we pay money to, the African Development Bank and NDP, and underspending in relation to ICT work within the Treasury itself of 18.5 million. Now again, the next slide is just a depiction of a graphical representation of the same information. I'm not going to explain that. Slide 21 is classification per program in terms of how spending happens. And again, slide 21 depicts that. Slide 22, now I did mention slide 22 and 23. I'm not going to repeat that in terms of what the 466 meant and defeated. Slide 24. Talks to the outcome of the audit report generally, where material findings in respect of completeness, as Laura indicated, achievements in programs 2 and 8, as she explained, there was compliance with legislation, and as I indicated, challenges around contract management and supply chain policies and processes. And slide 25 is again details of what the report from the AG indicates, and there are irregular, as I said, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Now, what is important is in slide 26. What then do we do? As I indicated, that we have set up an audit action plan to address the audit findings and underlying internal control failures. What we do, and this dedicated committee that you'll see the implementation of this and report to MENCO. And non-compliance and deviations are obviously being reported to me, myself and the minister on a monthly basis, and it's important that we continue doing that. Quarterly report progress to both the audit committee and to management around implementation of the audit action plan. And I said supply chain unit positions have been filled. And we're obviously holding DVGs responsible in terms of the audit findings, and if there are any repeat findings that we exercise action when need be in terms of those who are not taking, because it amounts to not taking their responsibility seriously, Chair, in terms of what how I should be holding DVGs accountable for the day-to-day management of the department. Just in terms of generally the health of the National Treasury, I think generally the committee should be comfortable that the state of the National Treasury is intact. The National Treasury is not about to collapse. We continue with dedication to our work. We obviously have disgruntled here and there employees, and they are in numbers, small numbers, out of 1,048. You've got three or four people that may not be happy for various reasons. Some of them would be performance related, we are dealing with them. Some of them would just generally be unhappy employees, but they're in the minority. And what we've introduced as just as consultations, at our level as management, we have got every Monday, we have got policy group meetings that we interface with the political principals. We engage on policy-related matters, not those matters affecting the Treasury. But as you can imagine, we exercise oversight on the whole of the state, on all policies of government, whether from the social side, from the energy side, from police, justice and clusters, so on. So we have this every Monday, without fail, we have policy group meetings. I have engagements with staff on an ongoing basis, individually as units. We call them DG in consult, DG in discussion with the rest of the treasury, the rest of the units. We've got engagements with women, we've got engagements with men as the DG's office, so that we focus on each matter. That we've got management meetings, which is broader management, and that happens every second. Because there's EXCO and there's MEMCO, I always confuse them. Laura corrects me every time. Every month we've got EXCO. EXCO is the DDGs and myself, no one else. MEMCO is extended. It's head of risk, head of CFO, head of legal, head of communications, and that again happens every month. So the management of the departments is intact in terms of day-to-day operations of the treasury and day-to-day management of how the department is managed. So I'm not worried about that. The worrying is all these leakages that the AG picked up around contract management, supply chain, and issues that you should be on top of it. And the final thing that is keeping us, giving me sleepless nights, is the state general in performance. Revenue collection at moment is down from SARS, leaves much to be desired. Growth is not coming our way. Economic policy has to be jacked up. That's why you saw the growth paper and how it worked. State-owned companies remain a challenge. And all of that, by the way, is on us. Not everyone in the whole of government, but on us. We have to obviously agonize openly with the rest of cabinet and cabinet members. So on that front, we are found wanting as a country, and it's not only a national treasury problem, it's a country problem. But committee finally should be comfortable that we are in place, things are intact, but it's like any niggling department, issues that are niggling the department vary from what you've mentioned. And I said we shouldn't be proud of those issues. Actually, we should be dealing with them so that we achieve what some of auditors who graduated recently called clean audits, which doesn't exist in audit language.
Thank you, Jeff.
Your closing statement is loaded. Okay, thanks, DJ and your team. Let me now come to an item where members will engage with the presentation. Questions, comments, honorable members? Honorable Mololong, honorable Mavinette, honorable Peters, honorable Vessels, honorable Nkomo, honorable Lewis. Yeah, in that order. Honorable Mruno.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Well, perhaps let me hasten by saying that we had expected that Treasury would be the one that would set precedence. And both the reports of the AG and the annual report are indicative of a growing regression in audit outcomes, especially in irregular expenditure. Whilst we welcome the fact that there will be some action plan, we would be interested in the details of consequence management. And we hope that we will forever be kept abreast of these matters of consequence management. Because you can't expect other departments to set their bar high if Treasury is unable to lead by example. I'm also worried about the implications of condoning this irregular expenditure. You know, I am even more worried when the Jobs Fund misses its target, despite the knowledge that we have that the window of funding is closed, or window for funding is closed. Even more disturbing is the fact that they have disbursed more than what was expected with less projects. And perhaps I should just ask a question. Why should the Jobs Fund have a target called projects? Shouldn't the target be jobs? Purely jobs. Thanks.
Thanks. Honorable Mavis.
Thank you, Chair. I think we sort of answered us in the last slide, the questions that we had. But however, DG, it's very disturbing that, you know, you are just going to underachieve in other levels. Yesterday we had the presentation. I think, you know, it was sort of preparing us. Today when we came here, we just said, okay, retiring. And I just want to touch and say what I said yesterday about vacancies. And I'm happy in your opening you also spoke about that, you know, there are people who are acting in your department, but they are doing a good job. Because I know that if I'm acting and given a chance to act, I'll do my best. So this thing of always writing that lack of vacancies, I don't think it's a reason. Because homebodies are there. I mean, the next question will be, why are you not hiring? I mean, South Africans are going all over with envelopes, like the chair said yesterday, looking for jobs. You know, I don't even want to go there. I think the minister will just help you to speed up this one. I don't think this one, if we keep on putting it in all the slides, lack of, you know, important vacancies, no, that one is not the reason. Because homebodies are homebodies, they must do the job. And where there are internal audit committee, and you also spoke about the other one, monitoring committee, you know, it's like they are increasing and increasing. And this committee, they can also consume your time. You will spend a lot of time discussing the AG report and not doing other things. So the slide 16, this one of graduates in training professionals, job fund project, grant funding, placement contract, that one is not on. It's very much disturbing. That one they are partially achieved, it must be fully achieved. I think maybe perhaps, I know the AG will just pick up one thing that they are doing for a year. This one, I think we must just repeat it and monitor it so that it must be fully achieved. Because it is where, you know, our people are. We're not going, this beautiful presentation, you will never go wrong because we know we've got the best in the country here in this room. What we are thinking, the question we are asking, we are representing our people. They will be saying when you take this to the public, well, Mama Bilisa, why didn't you ask them about this one? You know, soft issues. I think, I don't know, just do your best. Those who are acting, just do your best. Those who are not acting, just do your best. Because it's very much embarrassing as National Treasury. What will the other departments do? And for other vacancies, there's a competition. We all know that when you work for the government, you are serving. You are a server. We are here to serve. Me and you, all of us in this room, we are serving the community. We are serving the country. We are not here for real. I mean, money is just a compensation that you must have, you must leave. But if you are going to try to want and compete salaries with other private institutions, it's not going to work. Because as a server, you save, period.
Honorable Peter.
Thank you, Chairperson, and once more, my apologies for the late arrival. Thank you to the Deputy Minister and the DG and the officials of Treasury for presenting the annual report. But my question, DG and GM, is related to, I think, what Honourable Morolong raised about the job fund, Treasury tracing the number of projects and being able to achieve 123 of the approving 123 of the projects as opposed to 150. My question is, from the 23 that you did not approve, how many potential jobs did Treasury avoid being created in this country? Because I would believe that every project has got a particular number of intended jobs that they are targeting. But also to say that as a country, not necessarily the people walking around with envelopes. Over and above that, there are those without the envelopes who are going from door to door. They even say by a market, looking for job opportunities. And if there are people or entrepreneurs in our country who see the need to develop proposals that would lead to job creation, I would think that as Treasury, that would be some of the things that you actually target and make sure that you achieve. In fact, we should be encouraging Treasury to work even harder than the 150 that you are targeting. Under your supply chain management program, 5 indications, you report that you have achieved 90 criminal investigation cases supported. For me, supported does not necessarily go the whole way. You can support the investigations, but what was the outcome of those investigations? Have we been able to make a dent with the images that government has with regard to dealing with crime and corruption, especially within the public service? DG, whilst we should applaud you for the 1,185 municipal officials that you have trained, but is this training translating into tangible impact at the level of municipalities? I'm raising this, Chairperson, because the state of our municipalities leaves much to be desired, especially in matters related to supply chain management. Most of the challenges that we have at local government level are related to supply chain management. So I don't know whether a National Treasury enjoys training people into oblivion, because if you train people, you would have expected a different outcome. But also, Chairperson, our municipalities are regressing daily. And probably one of the things that Treasury and COPTA could be doing is to look at how the impact of the work that Treasury is doing, or the work that Treasury is doing, how does it also impact on the other work that COPTA is doing. Chairperson, lastly, DG, 5 years running, And Treasury not getting an unqualified. I would have thought that a Deputy Minister, Treasury would want to really make sure that they move from the previous records to improving and showing that you are leader of the pack and getting an unqualified. So I think that's the end of my question, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Firstly, there's a lot of repeat findings by the AG, and a lot of recommendations have been made in the past by the AG, especially with regards to leadership, with regards to consequence management, and with regards to internal controls. Why is Treasury failing to actually implement those recommendations? And as my colleague has mentioned, Treasury should set the example to other departments, to municipalities, and it's quite concerning that those basics are not being done. Things like proper record keeping, which is a repeat finding. Things like the level of assurances that's lacking. And that's of concern. We see the audit action plan, but it's not the first time that an audit action plan with this content has been put in place by Treasury. So what will make this audit action plan actually different from previous years where the same material findings were made by the AG? And how will Treasury really implement a plan to address those findings? Then with regards to the levels of assurances specifically, it is of concern that there's findings in that regard, and especially on almost all the levels in terms of National Treasury, and especially the internal audit unit. What's being done to address the lack of assurance being provided by the internal audit unit? And then in terms of consequence management, it has been mentioned in terms of irregular expenditure. But we hear that there is recommendations in terms of the irregular expenditure that resulted from the IFMS. But the question is, what plan is in place in terms of real disciplinary action and real consequence management in terms thereof? Because I don't hear that completely. Then in the annual report and the human resources job evaluation, I see only 3.3% of all the posts or jobs were evaluated. And there were no post upgrades or downgrades in this financial year of all 1,163 posts. Are you satisfied with that evaluation? Are you confident that all the posts in National Treasury are on the correct levels, that that evaluation was actually sufficient, the fact that only 3.3% were evaluated, and is that in line with actually improving performance and streamlining the functions of all jobs within National Treasury? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'd also like to welcome the presentation from the National Treasury. Chair, Honorable Morolong has covered me on what I wanted to raise in regards to the irregular expenditure, because the AG yesterday said that the irregular expenditure increased over 2 years. So I am also interested in terms of a detailed plan when it comes to consequence management. Secondly, I would also want to find out, because here it says the GTAC has applied to the OCPO for colonment. Why does the National Treasury want to colon something or accept something that is wrong? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairman. Director General, on the weekend of the 28th to 29th September 2019, you attended the National Executive Committee meeting of a certain political party in your capacity as Director General of the National Treasury. You made a presentation to that meeting about Treasury business, and the presentation which has since leaked and has been covered in the media, and which I'm sure has been sent round to most people in this committee, is marked on official government stationery as being secret. Now, so our constitution and our public sector regulations require the separation of the party and the state. So can you explain why you were there and whether you think it was appropriate in hindsight? Then, just to the Deputy Minister, since our election, I have personally tabled probably 24 parliamentary questions to the Ministry, and I know that many other parties, including those here in our committee today, have tabled many others, and the Ministry has responded to nearly none of them. I think in total to all parties since the election, the Ministry has responded to less than 5 parliamentary questions. So I'd just like an explanation for that, because it's the rules of Parliament require that you reply within 10 working or 10 parliamentary days. Then back to the Director General. On the issue of consequence management, for previous irregular expenditure, could you just outline how many people were disciplined last year for the irregular expenditure from last year's annual report? What was the nature of those disciplinary procedures? Was anyone dismissed or given warnings? Or rather, not the nature, the outcome. What was the outcome of those? And then I'd just like to make a general point about the weighting of your targets, your APPs. All of the 120-odd targets are weighted exactly the same, whereas the National Treasury's overwhelming primary mandate is to stabilize the national debt, and that requires sticking to the expenditure ceiling. Now, if you meet a target, a comparatively minor target, like, you know, doing some research or some project inside the Treasury, but you fail to achieve that target, which is of cardinal importance to the country and which is Treasury's primary objective, then it really does misrepresent your performance for the year, because it's all well and good to say that we achieved 90% of our targets, but among those that you did not achieve is the most important one. Treasury's number one goal is to stabilize national debt. So we need to have a discussion, and I suppose I'm asking for your view on the re-weighting of these targets so that we can get a sense of which targets are really the most important tasks that and objectives that Treasury has to meet each year, and so that we don't get a slight misrepresentation of your performance when we see green everywhere, but the one thing that is red is actually the most important thing. Thank you.
Thanks. Kosi Butler, do you have any question? Okay. Response, Deputy Minister and DG.
I can start, DM. Okay. No, thanks very much for the questions. Let me start from the back in this way. You see, whichever way you look at the South African story, Chair, in our own right, we are political beings. Before I'm a Treasury official, I'm a South African. I've got my own views and political views. In my years, not as DG of the Treasury, but as an official of the South African government for the past 20 years, whenever I chose to go to a political meeting of the ANC, I would put in leave if it's during a weekday. Because, and the nice thing about this, honour members, is that I'm a student of public policy and public management. I studied the politics and administration dichotomy from my first year, 1988 at university. And at some point, My honors paper that I did in 1991 was titled Public Management in a Post-Apartheid South Africa. This was in 1991. I was actually, my dissertation that was targeting the same issues that honorable member is raising around how do I draw the line? Where do I draw the line when I choose to be a public servant? So I understand that very well. So I'm not conflicted if I'm seen in an ANC t-shirt or I'm seen at a forum of the ANC over weekend, which is my spare time, and I choose to do that. And if I'm also becoming a responsible public servant because I cannot cease and say because it's Saturday and I'm at an ANC meeting, I'm not a director general or I don't know anything about what it will take to actually take the country forward, in the at least information that I is at my disposal that will ensure that I assist. Now, if I'm doing that as a director general, then I can also go to a DA Congress or EFF meeting, or and I'll be glad to doing that. If I'm doing that as a director general, if the ANC or the government, or any political party ask me as director general to come and say, come and share your understanding of debt and stabilizing debt. We will do that, and then we'll obviously get the necessary approvals through political processes. So I thought, let me give you that background to say, and there was an issue in December 2017 when some people in the DA saw me in an ANC t-shirt. It was not only a day. And they tweeted some of them, say, DG, what are you doing there? And I said, no, I'm exercising my democratic right to become a member of a political party that I chose. If tomorrow I decide to join the DA or EFF, I'll do the same. So it is more of a general answer, but the reality is that we are political beings and we cannot cease to be ones. And at the level that I am, which is a director general, I'm here at the behest of the cabinet. Because cabinet appoints me, and the cabinet happened to be the cabinet of the ANC government, which is in power. So, and so there's obligations to that. As much as the bigger call is an obligation as a public servant, as a South African who wants to serve all and come across as such. And that I think is important that it's understood as such. It's a discussion that should help this governing party take its issues forward, and I was doing exactly that. Now, I'm not going to comment about something that leaks, Chair, with your permission. I did not give anybody in the ANC system a presentation that people leaked, or whether that presentation I'm not going to comment on that. If I have to make a presentation in ANC setup, it will be non-branded because it's my view, and I will be a comrade and they'll be comrades, same story, and we'll address each other as such. So it's a different conversation, and let's not, this is my final point, bring something, and I understand where honourable member comes from, something that will cloud or conflict the conversation and make it difficult when we all know that we're all political beings before we become public officials. So it's obvious that a person will have a belonging. I'm not apolitical. I'm not saying if you're not an ANC member you will not be head of my office or you'll be head of my office. No. Because that's not the space for politics. It's not the space for whether I'm a member of the ANC or not. But it's a public service, and we have to, and we've done that. For the 20 years I've been, and we have engaged in the treasury. Momoniat, for instance, was an activist in the UDF, very prominent activist in the UDF in the early days, the 80s and 90s. At no point do we display his allegiance to the ANC in the way we work. And that's not how we actually seize, and the way we engage the politics in the treasury. Chair, final point, we even forget that Tito Mboweni or David Masonda are ANC members. We look at the facts, and the facts talk to, and you can attest that to anyone who works in the treasury. So
leaking documents is not our business. We inform journalists, will tell you that if someone says my source says, I don't deal with them, I refuse to interview it. I deal with the fact that Mamonia says this, what is your view? Here's my presentation, I'm not leaking the presentation. So leaking destroys this country and it has proven such in the past. On the debt issue, the issue I understand, the issue is about debt and whether we've got a certain target of debt. That's the bigger debate that we obviously have issues with and we've obviously contended with. Now, is there a target and how important is that target? So if we don't meet that target, do we say we fail? And we can answer it broadly around whether the targeted weightings are what we should be. But stabilizing national debt is quite important, yes, for our work. And we've always said that we don't have a number. We don't have a 40% debt to GDP number that we target. We'll be comfortable when it stabilizes, unlike if it rises. In 2017, it was hitting the roof. If you remember the current challenges that we're in October when you presented the MTV that year. Because it was not targeting a certain average or a certain stabilization level, which is it was hitting the roof. So it is an important factor, but we also have to be responsible that in an environment, for reasons that we all know, if SARS capacity was destroyed willfully so by many over time, and it's not able to achieve certain targets, that obviously will impact on your debt for that particular annual year. If the economy is not performing for whatever reason, it will impact on that. And you may, these are controls outside the treasury. We can say SARS will perform, SARS say, they say to us they've got 120 billion rand worth of, equivalent of money that's uncontested, undisputed money that they can draw. If we have to build that in, I don't have control of what SARS does, and they don't reach the target. It means I have not reached. Remember, when we set the debt to GDP by target at the beginning of the year, it's informed by the expenses and the revenues. Now, on the revenue side, you make certain assumptions around growth, make certain assumptions about debt collection and interest, etc. On the expenditure side, you have got a little bit of control, but if it's way outside your control, then it becomes a challenge. And so we can say yes, and we constantly put it as a target for ourselves because that's where we debt stabilization, intergenerational equity around where we want to be remains our cornerstone, and then the government has committed itself to do that. So we are open to relook at our targets and our weighting, and actually to reflect as such. But the reality is that if we don't constantly tell ourselves that we have to maintain debt levels at acceptable levels, then or stabilizing at some levels, then we'll have a problem because it will just go on and on. If you look at next year, and the AG and us argue this every year, for instance, we say, our macroeconomic variables, can you really audit us on the macroeconomic variables? If you are not able to. So it's always a contentious issue as to how we approach it, but we are prepared to engage as part of the committee as to what acceptable levels are. Even in the appropriations committee, we actually engage with the committee all the time around, and it will be the same when the appropriation bill, next year's appropriation bill, is looked at, whether 60 or 70 or 50 or 40% debt to GDP is the target. Now, The irregular, now, it is acceptable that, I'm accepting the fact that members are making across that Treasury, you should be a demonstrate above board management of finances. You cannot falter. I take that. And the details of consequence management, I think we will, we'll obviously have to make those available, Honourable Nkomo and others, and I think Honorable Murulan started this around what details there can be, because remember it will be previous, it will be past, and future. We are prepared to do that. Now, the plan for IFMS consequence management, remember we said irregular spending of last year, the bulk of it was as a result of IFMS.
and the bulk of it is what is in the IFMS forensic report that directed us to what actions we should be taking. And at the beginning I said, the last committee we were saying we are going to be writing, we appointed a team of lawyers who are looking at the charges, and the difference between then when we spoke and now is that the team of lawyers made recommendations, charge sheets have been given to us, we've assessed them, we look at them, and I'm saying now to the committee, the process of executing all the recommendations in place, ongoing, and the results obviously will be available, because people have the right to defend themselves, right to prove, in some cases we are looking for chairpersons to chair the disciplinary committees and so on, because again, that should be someone, everything should be above board. So with IFMS, honourable members, I have tried, despite what SCOPA in the fifth administration, what SCOF in the previous administration were forcing us to do, which we did to an extent, was to act and act fast, and I know we have to act and act fast, but I was ensuring that we do it proper from day one and with legal assistance throughout, because we are not only going to have to deal with past, previous or current employees, we also have to deal with, in some cases, demanding payment from service providers who the report suggests that they regularly paid and so on. So all of that, I wanted to do it properly. It can take long, but the reality is that we are at a point, we are right at the final stage now in terms of implementing that. Laura will come to some details that obviously talks to some of the questions directly. It is unacceptable, Honourable Poor Peter, that 5 years of running, it is, I think let's get it clear, it's not that Treasury got qualified for this. Your question seems suggested that you were saying that it cannot be that I didn't get it, but I thought you were saying that, what I hear you saying, in terms of, even though it may come out different, is that for 5 years, we should be improving other than regressing, and actually working towards being a unqualified with no findings, because the issue is with no findings, yes. And that's what the aim is. But if we're going to become a qualification and disclaimer, then I would be very worried. I would actually have left. I would have been fired a long time ago.
No, I said unqualified.
Yes, okay, no, maybe I've got it.
The leader of the pack.
Yes, we should be up there. No, I agree. Thank you, honorable member. So, the training, we may have done 1,105 and we can demonstrate and prove that we've done training through the MFIM program. The reality is that the challenges at local government level are huge, and the challenges are not only around supply chain info management and supply chain experience, etc. We all know the problems at local government is also about politicians on the ground interfering in supply chain management, despite the FMFA saying they shouldn't even get anywhere near that. That's the challenge. And that then is, and there's evidence in many of the audit reports that we've seen where there was interference. So we can train people in supply chain, in financial management, but if the oversight, and I'm not in the local government space, if the oversight roles of politicians is not enhanced on the ground in municipalities, then you can as well close shop there, because these MMs and municipal finance CFOs and section whatever 56 of the managers must be kept accountable by the oversight bodies in councils. So if the oversight bodies in councils are a challenge themselves, then we have a problem. And I can only say this with what I know, at least in some of the municipalities who are under section 139 in Northwest, as an example, because it's under administration. My experience can only relate to those that we at least can see and can know. But in the 250, yes, the challenge is huge, and municipalities are regressing daily, as you said, and I don't doubt what you're saying. But again, it's important that our intergovernmental team and our municipal, and all those people that we place in municipalities, that we can see value and reasons why they should be there. On our abilities, no doubt, I mean, slide 16 should be a different slide when you come here next year. I mean, it should be totally achieved, and if it's about creating jobs, and we will, and I don't know how best Laura will explain this in terms of the jobs fund,
Because the job fund relationship is a bit funny, and look, it's historical, we have to fix it, and we are fixing that. In terms of how direct oversight do I, as GG, as much as it's program 8 reporting, play on oversight on job fund? Because currently what we've done with job fund, when we created it, it was a 9.2 billion rand fund, it was at the DBSA, and for some reason it didn't work as we wished, we brought it back into the treasury. Bring it back into the treasury, we then brought it as a unit in GTEC. And all the accounting arrangements and the responsibilities, and actually the actual disbursements and monies, it remains in GTEC. So effectively, if it was GTEC appearing in front of you, they would be getting into details around the jobs fund. We are clearly cleaning that up in terms of the reporting line, because if you speak to jobs fund, they'll tell you that there's a line with the minister, there's a line with GTEC. When it's convenient, there's a line with the treasury, and because they are here. So it has been ongoing, but we are getting there. But you are right. I think maybe if the target, and we take it as instructive or as a suggestion from the committee, to say, let's not talk projects. Let's rather talk target jobs and number of jobs, and we can measure. Maybe we need to do that in terms of how jobs fund evolve, and we will certainly take that into account. And by the way, if you look at the performance of the fund, every year for the past couple of years, whenever we needed money, jobs fund is underspending and we've been taking money from the jobs fund. But there's a way that the jobs fund people explain, because they say what essentially may be seen as underspending should be seen in the form of commitment, because most of the time you're not committing for 1 year per year, you're committing over a number of years. That money will obviously be disbursed in year two or year three once certain obligations have been met by the partner. Because jobs fund is a match fund. Match fund, yeah.
Yeah, match fund.
Meaning, Lizelle brings 1 million rand, I bring 1 million from government, then it's 2 million. And until we will record it as such and say, Lizelle's company to create 100 jobs is going to get 1 million, and we put it as such. But the actual transfer of the money will not happen until Lizelle puts 1 million rand in an account, and then only then it flows. Now, if that happens at the end of the financial year, before she puts 1 million, then it shows as underspending. So there's some arrangements that are problematic in the way we account for it. But it's all, so in most cases, they'll argue that what you see as underspending is actually should be committed. And don't touch it, don't take it, because it may be committed for future. So with jobs fund, it's one of those funds that I think we have to continuously look at how best to modernize and modify in order for the targets to be met, which the targets in this case the committee suggests, and it makes sense that it should actually be the number of jobs that the companies that are partnered with jobs fund will create, not necessarily just the project, because it may just be not relevant. Maybe, Chair, there's a number of us here, and if colleagues feel they want to come in, please feel so. But I'm going to ask Laura to just come in areas where I have left, because she's deliberately, I left them deliberately for her.
Thank you, DG, and thank you to the committee. So I'll just try and go in chronological order as best I can. In terms of the training, and the amount of training we do at local government, and recognising that we are not the only department, as you indicated, that provides training. I will want to indicate to the committee that our IGR division is currently conducting an impact study on all training that is being delivered, not only by us, but all, to local and provincial government, and I'm sure that once that study is completed, we can provide the results to the committee. It is an issue that we ourselves are looking at. Recognising the factors, however, in terms of the training, that there is in some areas, specifically in local government, we have high turnover that requires additional training, that the conducive environment is not always there to allow for a fully impactful engagement, and that is all being taken into consideration, because it's time for us to address those systemic challenges and not just keep on training, as you said. So we'll provide the committee with that report. We also want to indicate that in terms of our relationship with ourselves and COCTA, we have significantly strengthened that relationship in order for us to better integrate our service delivery through an MOU that has now been signed between Treasury and COCTA. This is to ensure that we complement the work that we do together, and that we clearly assign where work areas have developed and are growing organically. It clearly gets assigned to which department should be the lead, and then we can properly provide support. On the irregular expenditure matter, I do think it's important, as the DG indicated, and I'd just like to re-emphasize it because I know it was at the beginning of our presentation and people might not yet have settled down. So it is important to note that our irregular expenditure for this year was 588, down from 809 of the previous year. And of that 588, 122 came from the previous financial year. It is not yet, the request for condemnation is not yet finalized, and in part it's because of the consequence management that needs to happen. So when you talk about consequence management, that will be included in that report that DG has indicated will give you.
For us to apply to the OCPO, remember the OCPO then, I'm Department of Education, and in this case I just happen to be a department called National Treasurer. I have to apply for condonation from the CPO. As DG of the Treasury, I write a letter to him and ask for condonation. In considering condonation, there's methods of consequence management that will make it easy for him to grant. If I cannot demonstrate that, he'll say, no, you go to SCOPA because you cannot demonstrate that you're going to do anything about what has been identified as irregular spending. Then I'm as useless as I can be. Go and deal with SCOPA. I'm not granting him condemnation. So in this case, same thing here. There are consequence measures that we have to implement in order for him to... So that means... We are telling the committee, we are forcing ourselves with this 122 that it remains irregular in our books. They'll keep on lifting it up until such time that I go and ask. But for him to grant, I can only demonstrate, you know, consequence management in his broadest sense, whether I've done anything, I've suspended people, I've fired people, I've given them written warning or whatever. Whatever it is that is part of the disciplinary process package.
The 140 from MFIP out of that irregular, that where the contract was signed by the acting AG, not the DG, we've indicated that the consequence management is part of the, will be an outcome of the report of the investigation, which is currently underway. And then the 185, which is the contract extensions on transversal systems, that is not due to a individual irregularity or action. That is due to the fact that we have got this gap between us having to deliver services on contracts and IFMS not yet being implemented. So I did want to make that point that in terms of irregular, whilst it is still a challenge and of a key focus for us, it has gone down and we are applying consequence management. In terms of the audit repeat findings, it's very important for us to point the following. We introduced this committee last year that on a quarterly basis, each of the audit finding owners have got to come and report to us as to what they're doing. And the consequence management is located at the DDG level. It was introduced as a pilot last year. We've now reviewed that. We've reviewed the committee and its success, and we've implemented additional strengthening of that committee to address some of the weaknesses. So even in our addressing of audit findings internally, we are making strengthening mechanisms. I agree we need to be careful that we're not in too many committees. But if you look at who is in that committee, you know, there's the Office of the DG, the Chief Risk Officer, the CFO, and the Head of the Strategic Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. That is their function, is to ensure that the system not only monitors, but ensures consequences where there's challenges.
next cycle, which falls into the next financial year, to address the what is perceived as underperformance. So you will see for the jobs fund, if you look at the grant funding approved, number of placements, the value of grant funding, all of that is seen as underperformance in this year, but in the next year will be addressed through the base funding round, which falls outside of that financial year. So it's an anomaly, but it then catches up and it then comes through as a performance. Also, in terms of the number of job fund projects approved, the issue here is, I agree, the issue is not about how many projects is in the job fund. We do track all of the indicators. We track number of projects, we track number of jobs contracted, we track number of placements contracted, we track number of training placements contracted. But the number of jobs approved is to look at the number of jobs that go correctly through the investment committee. So that is a operational indicator that we track, and I think it's an important one to track. Because remember, the investment committee assesses the job, the application, and it's to make sure that it's another way of us having a control mechanism on the kinds of projects that go through the job fund. In terms of weighting of our indicators, I understand that there are critical service deliveries of trees. I am not of the school of thought that believes that we should weight indicators. I believe that it is essential for Treasury not to encourage ivory towers of achievement and swimming in pools of poor performance. It is imperative whether we are having to deliver on rating agencies, whether we're delivering on OCPO and their procurement bill, that whatever National Treasury has as a mandate, that we ensure that it's delivered on. So while it may appear that we have a sea of green and some red, whatever the red is, we're concerned about and we address. But the sea of green is equally important. If we don't get OCPO delivering at 100%, if we don't get OHG delivering at 100%, the impact on those areas of our service delivery is significant. So, you know, whilst I'll be open for that discussion, I'd be hard-pressed to agree. I believe that Treasury must deliver on all of its indicators equally. And then my last point is in terms of the job evaluation, and I'm sure that we will come to that. But I just want to say that it's important for us to know that National Treasury is going through an organizational reform process. It is a significant project that we're doing. It will not just be tinkering at the edges. That as part of our strategic planning process, Treasury is reviewing our entire strategic planning position, as well as our program position, and therefore our structure. As you know, structure follows strategy. A large part of the work that we do around OD, for example, is going into that organizational review, and job evaluation and business processes is happening as part of that. So whilst it may seem that there's been less performance here, there is huge amount of work that is happening. And that will come through as part of our next strategic planning process, and you will certainly see that in terms of our structure.
So with your permission, I've asked the colleagues if they want to come in.
I want to raise raise to the issue. I think that it's important Treasury certainly performs on all its indicators. That goes without saying. But I do think that at some point, not for now, we need to review how departments report on performance. I think that the system has taken over, there's a lot of reporting that's done, and perhaps it's not a question of weight, but it's a question of what are the essential issues around which you assess performance of departments. It will be something, I think, during the life of this Parliament, I think, useful just to look at, because I do fear, and I'm looking at it more from at the time of the PFMA,
The focus was supposed to be on outputs, but we've got a system where we're measuring lots of inputs, and really I'm not sure if you are performing on your outputs why we should over-focus on inputs. If a department's not performing, then I think the focus should be on inputs, but there's a bit of overkill, I think, on the performance. And if you look at some of the measures that are there, really, do they really make sense? Not just in the Treasury, I'm just saying broadly in government. It's worth a discussion more broadly. So not to make any excuses for us, we must perform against all the indicators, but I do think that at some point it would be good to just review whether this approach is what Parliament wants in terms of holding people like us accountable for performance. Just as a general.
I don't think I have any questions on my...
I'm advised that according to the report of Leader of Business, which was presented to Cabinet, coming from Parliament, for the Department of Finance, we received 20 questions from the National Assembly, and we responded to 9, and the 11, they are still in the system. And from the NCOP, we received 4 questions, and we've answered 2. So if there's any questions that we've not responded to, it means that they are in the system and they will be reaching you soon. Because we do take seriously the questions that come from National Assembly, from both houses, because that's the only way we can, amongst other ways through which we can be held accountable. So it's not in our interest to delay or not respond at all to questions that are coming from the Assembly. Now, the second issue which the DG has responded to is his presence in the ANC meeting in which he presented some document. I think we need to remind ourselves that the Constitution firstly guarantees all of us the freedom of association. Again, the Constitution enjoins us that when we are public representatives, we don't serve a political party, we serve all South Africans. And therefore, if a public official is requested by the DA, ANC, EFF to go and present something, I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. And I'm also advised that the Statistics General, for instance, he was invited by the EFF to go and present stats, and he did it because he owes it to the public, and the public is organized in different ways, in churches, in political parties, in trade unions. And if we are asked to go and present in those platforms, we have no reason not to. The issue will be if a public official X refused to go and present to a particular political party because he belongs to another. I think that's where the problem will be. But we, in order for us to really, really depend on democracy, it's important to open up spaces for information sharing, so that as political parties, as civil society, will take informed positions and decisions on in the best interest of the country. And subject to correction, I'm also advised that the former public protector, she went to present something to the Democratic Alliance, and there's nothing wrong with that, because again, to underscore the point that if we're to deepen our democracy, you can't take decisions if you have no information, as they always say that knowledge is power. And where would, as political parties, as civil society, get this information if
our public representatives, our public officials refuse to give us the information that we need in order to take informed decisions. So I think that's my answer on this one, just to reinforce what the DG has essentially said. I mean, if you want me to come and present as a deputy minister of finance to any political party on an issue, I'm, because I serve everyone, I serve South Africa, I don't only serve my narrow political party interests, I serve all South Africans, and if I'm asked to go and make a presentation, I'll gladly do so. Now, on the second question, which came from Honorable Vessels, it's on the, I think that's the last question. The other questions have been answered. I'm comfortable with the answers. I have nothing to add to what the DG and my colleagues in National Treasury have said. It's on the division of labor between National Treasury and COCTA. You're right that the MMFA, PFMA, has assigned certain responsibilities between National Treasury as well as COCTA. So what we've agreed to do between us, that is National Treasury, and COCTA, is to have the memorandum of agreement, which clearly articulates the division of labor between the two departments, which will also guide what provinces, provincial treasuries, as well as the provincial coctors at provincial level, they will have to work according to that memorandum of agreement. It should be finalized soon, in which we clearly delineate who does what and who should be accountable for all the issues, for the support that we need to give to local government. I think, Chair, those are the two outstanding issues that I thought I should respond to, because the others have been adequately covered by the DG and my colleagues.
thanks, Deputy Minister, and DG and your team. Are there follow-up questions? Honorable Lewis. Okay, Honorable Lewis.
Chairman, I will say very frankly, I have respect for the Director General's professionalism. I have no objection whatsoever to his right under the Constitution to join any political party he wants. I'm not interested in his political affiliation. I will never ask him about his political affiliation. But it is not appropriate, in my view, for the Director General to present as Director General and to make a Treasury presentation in a closed meeting of any political party in South Africa, whether that be my party or the governing party. It is simply not appropriate. And I think this might be a matter that the Public Service Commission should issue some kind of practice note on, because it's happening more and more often that we see directors general, of various government departments presenting at ANC meetings. And this is a service, no matter how much you say it, it is a service that is not freely available to other political parties, nor, as I say, should it be. Now, to get to the substance of the presentation, here's the presentation, and you didn't reply to this in your answer to my question. Every page of this presentation, which is on Treasury, it's exactly the same as this presentation that you've given today. It's on Treasury slides. Every page of it is marked secret. Now, as the accounting officer, I presume you have classified this document secret, and you presented it to 80 members of the NEC, among which are the minister, the deputy minister, and the chairperson of this committee. So if the NEC wanted a presentation on Treasury, there's people more than qualified to give them that presentation. But this information was classified as secret by the state. You gave it to 80 people who are not allowed to receive secret state information in terms of the law. And you gave it to them before this information is not in the public knowledge. So you were not giving them a presentation just on the state of the economy. That we can read in the Business Day. You were giving them information which we as members of this committee to which you account do not even have. So I challenge the view, sir, with respect that this was in any way appropriate. I think it was inappropriate. I think you should really seriously consider or reconsider attending such meetings in the future, and this is perhaps something that the Public Service Commission should look at with regards to issuing some kind of practice note about senior civil servants attending party political meetings in their capacity as civil servants. In your private capacity, you are, of course, free and welcome to associate with any political party you want. But you cannot give a government presentation containing secret government information to a political party when the elected officials to whom you account are not even aware of that information. That is wrong. It's inappropriate. And I believe is in contravention of Public Service Commission regulations.
Which public service regulations have you violated?
I'll read them to you. Section 12, subsection F, says that any member of the SMS should not abuse his or her position in the public service to promote or prefer the interests of any political party or interest group. Now, by giving a presentation which no one else has and which is not in the public domain to assist in the decision-making process, as the Deputy Minister has said, clearly prefers the interests of that political party over others who do not have access to that information and who cannot have access to that information because it is secret.
So that is subject to interpretation, isn't it?
Yes, sir. I started my question by saying I've heard the DG's answer, but in my opinion it is wrong. This is inappropriate, and I think the Public Service Commission should express itself on this because they are the custodians of these regulations. And I think the spirit of these regulations, read with our Constitution, which protects the separation of party and state, should be respected completely by the DG and his colleagues.
Okay, I don't think we should make it a subject of this meeting. You yourself in 2012 defended the then public protector when she addressed the Women's Day of the DA. Go into the archives. I don't have to read to you what you said as a political party, and whom the public protector is supposed to be seen to be independent, let alone a teacher. You went into length why you thought it was necessary for the public protector to address that meeting in August 2012, and the matter was put to rest. So let's not have double standard. And as the DM has said, if you want anybody who's in the public service to come and address any political party, or a special party, which parties which are represented in parliament, they will never decline to take that invitation. So I don't have to make this a subject of this meeting.
Sir?
No, wait. Why we met today was to deal with the annual report of Treasury, and we have substantially done so. And in the next session, we are going to meet SARS, also to engage SARS in terms of the annual report. Those are the comments and questions the Deputy Minister and DG, that what is it that you want to raise, sir?
Sir, I just wanted to say, you said you yourself defended that decision. Do you mean me personally? I don't...
I mean the DG.
Oh, I see.
Yes. So, Deputy Minister, attend to the issues that have been raised by the Auditor General. and by members of the committee. Because Treasury is not like any other department. It's a department solely established by the Constitution, Chapter 13. And if you look at Chapter 13, it clearly outlines that the National Treasury must enforce compliance with the measures established in terms of Subsection 1. Subsection 1 of 216 outlines what you are supposed to do. So if here is an organ of state or a department which is supposed to enforce, it does not even say monitor. It talks about enforcement. It's a very strong word. You have to enforce those measures. But you yourself, you are regressing for the past 5 years. Your moral authority will begin to be questioned. You will not have a high moral standing when you address municipalities, organs of state, entities, and other departments. Because they will say, but you issue this and this note to us. But if you look at the report of AG on procurement, supply chain, there are serious issues that are being raised and they have to be attended to. No authority, somebody who is not in the line of supply chain does other things and they are agreed to, and payment subsequently is effected. So let's look at these issues very seriously, because entities like PIC, for instance, because the report we got yesterday is not only Treasury Department, it also includes entities. And the report of the AG raised very critical issues about PIC, the lapse in governance. Issuing or giving borrowers loans, the next thing they are turned off, no explanation. And PIC is one of the biggest public institutions which is in the custody of public funds. And we can't keep quiet when an institution just keeps on writing off loans. I think we'll have to meet PIC honorable members, because it can't be that the AG picks up PIC as a case study and we don't say anything about that, so that they explain themselves why do they do this. Remember, why we are involved in the Steinhoff case is because of the PIC, for instance, 20 billion. Now AG has also identified other issues on top of the 20 billion. So it's a matter for that needs the attention of this committee, because it's our responsibility to play oversight on institutions like PIC. The issue of unauthorized expenditure, regular expenditure, fruitless, and Laura, I think you must take this thing very serious, not in the manner that you gave the explanation. Because the Treasury regulations, which enforces the PFMA, says the accounting officer of a department must exercise all reasonable care to prevent and detect unauthorized, irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure, and must for this purpose implement effective, efficient, and transparent processes of financial and risk management. I heard you when you were giving the explanation and were not satisfied. You know what is provided for by Treasury regulation, and your department is the custodian of treasury regulations. And if you are the first to transgress treasury regulations and you give those explanations, I don't think we will accept that. You are regressing, amongst other things, because of the increase in irregular and unauthorized expenditure. So these are issues that you have to seriously address when you go back and make sure that Treasury is at the right level when it comes to audit outcomes. So thanks very much, and we believe that you will respond to all the questions also in writing, because the AG and ourselves will have to follow up on the responses that you have made today here. Even next year when we meet you again to embark on the same exercise, we will remind you that in the previous financial year, these are the recommendations that you should have implemented, and what have you done in that regard. So AG will also audit your non-compliance in respect to not adhering to the recommendations of the AG and the portfolio committee, because this is not an academic exercise. We are an independent arm of government which does oversight role, plays oversight role on the executive, and the executive must take serious issues that are raised by both organs of the state or those institutions that support democracy and parliament. So let's deal with these issues. And probably even before we meet PIC ourselves, you must meet PIC. And they've explained to you what are these things. Because we can't have just loans. Companies wake up and liquidate themselves, and then the loan gets returned off. No, that cannot be allowed. And it looks like it's becoming a practice, and we don't see anything wrong. We are still going to meet PIC and GEPF on the Spain Health loans. They have to explain to us what happened, because they don't seem to have a sense of agency in regard to that. You remember when we were at SARS in China? They did not come out clear in that regard, and they were not there in our last meeting, in our engagement with Spain Health. It's a very serious matter. What's happening at PIC cannot be ignored. It's a cause for concern. Thanks very much, honorable members, deputy minister, officials. I'm closing the meeting. Officials from Auditor General, Treasury, and Parliament, and our guests. The meeting. No, I'm closing the meeting, please. Thanks very much.
Chairman, on a point of order.
Honorable Lewis, I'm a chair of this committee. Can you respect the chair?
Sir, I'm raising a point of order, sir.
I'm not going to take that point of order. I've given you in two occasions to raise your point, and now you're becoming disruptive. And
sir, Mike, no. Been replied?
No. Can you be in order yourself? I rule that I'm not going to take your point.
Sure.
The meeting is official adjourned. We'll meet again at 2 when we engage in SARS. Can you be in order? This meeting is conducted in terms of the rules of Parliament.
Would you allow me to raise a point of order?
The meeting is officially adjourned. Please.
All right,
the meeting is officially adjourned. We don't accept that kind of behavior.